Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
In today's show, we talk trap again. In part two of the story of Calcio's greatest manager. Plus, Juventus relentless. How you like those huevos, Simeone, as Juve storms through to the quarterfinals. Also, Ranieri at Roma and the Milan derby this weekend. All coming up in Golazzo. Buongiorno, listener. And buongiorno to you, Gabriele Marcotti and James Horncastle.
Hello.
Hello.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno, capo. Now, we had a busy
capo
week.
Capo now.
Dottor. We have a lot on our agenda today, listener. That's the exciting news with the return of Claudio Ranieri, the return of Juve as well, and our big look forward to Milan-Inter. But, of course, we have unfinished business from last week, Sir Golazzo. Giovanni Trapattoni, you remember in last week's show, which I hope you heard, how Giovanni had risen from humble beginnings in the Milanese ghetto that is Cusano Milanino. The shanty town. He had a good 23 minutes against Pele. I'm summing up a little bit here. Got a surprise move to Juve as manager and only became the most successful club manager in the world. And then came the best bit where he went to Inter and broke all records for the best club season ever in Serie A. But it all comes to an end in 1991. And while Zucchero and Paul Young charm the continent with their multilinguistic pop classic Senza una donna, Trap goes back to his old lady, Juventus. So Trapp's back in Turin, and there's a great team awaiting him. You've got Conte, you've got Di Canio, Gigi Casiraghi.
You start with Conte and Di Canio.
Well, I'm going alphabetically.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, I'm not, because there's Robbie Baggio, there's Schillaci, there's Jürgen Kohler, Julio Cesar, the Bat, Giants, Tacconi. Yeah, and Vialli comes next summer, of course. But it's a great squad. Why doesn't it work?
So the interesting thing about that was this was an incredibly top-heavy squad. Juve looked at it, and Juve made the decision year before when they appointed. They kind of looked at Milan's success, and it wasn't just that Milan played great football, won the Champions Leagues or the European Cups, as it was then, but it was also that suddenly everybody liked Milan. You know, it was really hard to dislike them. Just simply the way they played, they were so successful, and Juve were like, we need to regain our luster, and we need to do this by playing exciting attacking football the way Milan do. And so they were like, let's buy all these attacking players and let's go and think outside the box and appoint somebody like Sacchi, because he couldn't get Sacchi.
The champagne salesman, Gigi Manfredi.
Yeah. One's a shoe salesman, one's a champagne salesman. Gigi Manfredi, a guy who done very well at Bologna playing sort of this mad pure zone system, and he just didn't have the personality when in talking about playing 4-2-4 and all this nonsense. And when it didn't work very quickly, they got cold feet. And as football clubs often do, they swung the pendulum entirely in the other direction and says, ooh, let's get the king of old school. And Trapattoni still had a contract with Inter at the time. He was one of the first managers who was actually transferred for compensation.
Right.
In the sense that they sent players the other way.
It wasn't a successful return, though, to Turin. They had second place finish the first year, fourth the second year, when they had Gianluca Vialli and David Platt. And Andreas Müller joining as well. And Ravanelli all joined.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
He says that Platt was out injured for 3 months. And
also, they had the three foreigner rules. So he was a lot of the time out the side and Andreas Müller was playing instead.
And as Gab said, it was a really top-heavy side. And keeping everyone happy was a bit of a problem, because players like Platt would come and expect to play, and he was like, no, that's not going to happen. But just another anecdote from Trapattoni's book about the mentality at Juve at the time, they wanted to sign Bergkamp as well. And they had this half-baked idea that put Bergkamp up front and play Viali in midfield. Yeah. Just because of his kind of athleticism and that sort of thing, which again just goes to show how teams in Italy were thinking and responding to Sacchi's Milan. Zeman as well, I suppose.
Mm.
On David Platt, it's worth noting that when he played, and I mean, because you had the three foreigner rule, the foreigners had to be really, really good because you only play three of them. And he had his first few games and, you know, he worked hard and stuff, but, you know, he kind of played a little bit within himself. So there was so many questions, so much criticism of him. And Trapattoni came out and said, like, enough breaking balls over David Platt. If his name was Platy and he was Italian, you'd all be saying how wonderful he is.
And did David respond, only my friends call me Platy?
That would have been... Yeah, that was kind of the alley-oop for you.
One of Trapp's great Juventus signings was, is the carpenter who, you know, they played against in a friendly one time and thought, this guy's pretty good.
Yeah, Torricelli. So he was working for a factory in the works team.
Yeah, chopping wood.
And he went to the World Cup.
Trapp says one of his greatest kind of successes, achievements, if you like, on the second time around at Juve. There weren't many.
Yeah.
He was seeing Torricelli, what a year, I think year to the day of that friendly lifting the UEFA Cup.
Right.
They won against
so they won the UEFA Cup 6-1 on aggregate because it was a two-legged final in those days, destroying Borussia Dortmund in a series of finals that was effectively belonged to Robbie Baggio. And for me, those are always the Baggio's great moment at Juve.
Trapp says that he had a specific wolf whistle for Baggio.
Did he?
Because he didn't find him, as Gab has told us before, the most tactically disciplined player. Didn't think he was much of a team player as well. Certainly when it came to fare gruppo, you know, be a team off the pitch, you know, go out for dinner, spend some time together at the training ground.
He's the Baggio Gareth Bale of his era.
Yeah, just without the golf. Hunting instead of golf.
Mm.
But yeah, would do this whistle, which would obviously, I think, annoy Baggio.
Right.
He just knew it was
that's good. One of the things we should probably mention about Trapattoni is that he's probably the most gifted whistler in the history of humanity. He has about 15 or 20 different whistles,
right,
which he can individually direct at different players. And they kind of mean like, I'm watching you, you know, do what I told you to do before the game. And
yeah,
so
it's a classic sight. Two fingers of each hand placed in corners of the mouth, joining just above the tongue, which curls up to meet the fingertips. Extraordinary high decibel blast.
But I actually had him do this.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, this is like 15, 20, I don't know if he can still do it. It's like 20 years ago. But he produced like, well, you can whistle like this or like this. And he makes all these different noises with his like hands at his mouth, which just looks so creepy, but worked for him.
Okay. Anyway, so Juve, 93-94, his final season there. The forwards that season, talk about top-heavy, Baggio, Viali, and they've got Del Piero and Ravanelli now as well.
And then the triad comes in.
And then the triad comes in and he leaves. Now, what's Trapattoni's position as something of a Juve legend himself? What's his opinion on the people who kind of characterise the next era of the old lady?
Well, not a fan of Luciano Moggi because he said he was a kind of agent before there were agents in that he would just essentially turn up as some kind of interloper and offer players. And yeah, Trapp credits him with basically putting Paolo Rossi to the Juventus board, and that's the reason why they ended up signing him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a regular feature of, and we'll get to this as well, is when Trapp's in charge of Cagliari. You know, the owner at Cagliari, Massaro Cellino at the time, seems to be very dependent on Moggi for advice for players and whatnot. And certainly when he becomes the coach of the national team, this kind of constant quid pro quo with Moggi is like, well, I'll let you have this player for this international break, but can you just leave out the other one and all this sort of thing? So just always felt that I think he was interfering.
Trapattoni's book, how does it read, given that he's famous not just for his whistle, but also his appalling sentence construction?
Well, he talks about when he gets the island job, someone gives him James Joyce's Ulysses, thinking that sort of James Joyce writes in the same sort of style, sort of sentence structure as Trapp speaks. But yeah,
it's not a comparison I ever
well,
expected
I
to hear.
He accepts this because he says, you know, after two or three pages, he got a headache. But then again, most people got a headache listening to Trapp.
Yeah. My Diddy Goal, which is a famous satirical show that ran through the 90s and early 2000s, I think, in Italy. Was it still going when you got there?
Yeah.
One of their regular features was an ipse dixit on Giovanni Trapattoni, where they basically commentate on his post-match responses.
Abbiamo così, siamo fenomeno così eterogeneo.
Certo.
È la verità, tante volte dobbiamo tenercelo dentro.
È proprio ora, lui. È tutto molto chiaro. Però lui. Se qualcuno per caso, e non so spiegarmi perché, non avesse colto bene.
That shows two most famous skits were Trapattoni's Ipse Dixit and making fun of Fashioner. Just Fashioner's misses.
Right.
He became Fashioner's probably more famous in Italy than he is here, just about. I'm talking about John, not his
right.
late
yeah.
brother Justin.
The second spell at Juve ends, and then a little bit like, I don't know, Robert Pattinson or something like that, a Hollywood star who decides to eschew the blockbusters and go for rather more interesting artistic fare. He moves abroad, first of all, to Bayern for the first spell.
Kevin Rummenigger, his former Inter striker,
right.
giving him the phone call.
Cagliari, where, just bearing in mind, this is the biggest managerial name in the Italian game. Cagliari, who were like a struggling and you know still are a struggling side in a little bit of a backwater, run by the now infamous Massimo Cellino.
Then infamous too.
Absolutely. But. Who puts pictures of Trapattoni on the sides of the buses. Basically, his season ticket campaign was based around the fact of I have hired Trapattoni. Mm. But lo and behold, what happens? Trapattoni had never been fired, and why would he have been? Ends up dismissed before the end of the season.
Well, I don't think he thinks he got fired in this one. He says he kind of walked away.
Oh, really?
He said Cagliari had finished ninth the season beforehand, mm. which was pretty damn good. And
was that under Mazzoni?
No, it was under Tabárez. Tabárez basically goes up to him and says, yeah, that's not a real true reflection of how good this team is. It's a miracle that we got to ninth. And Trapp kind of thinks, he's just saying that, self-interest and all that sort of thing. But he's like, no, actually, he's right. This is
right.
not an easy job.
Well, his final match was a 4-1 defeat to his old side, Juve, Cagliari 13th.
Oh, yeah.
I asked him why he went back to Cagliari. And he was like, look, I've been at Bayern. I wanted to go home. But the reality was that in Italy, you know, going back to Juve was not an option with Moggi. Going back to Inter wasn't either. He'd done so well there. Milan, they were sort of coming out of the Sacchi Capello era. It was kind of a mess and stuff. And he says, and I never liked Berlusconi. He's like, I didn't want to go down there. So
sort of a warrior of the light, no? Okay? Mm,
he
doesn't want to work with Berlusconi. He leaves Juve because of Moggi.
But he said, like, I had spent my entire career as a player and as a manager at really big clubs. And I wanted to take a club and try to make them great.
Mm.
And that's the reason he gave. And
I suppose someone who's had so much success in the way of Trapp, he probably thought I could be the guy who could win a league title with Cagliari.
I think it's entirely admirable. You know? I'd love to see the likes of Guardiola do this.
Mm.
Maybe you will, because Guardiola, of course, has famously said, if I ever manage in Serie A, Brescia. It's going to be a Brescia.
Brescia. Well, that would be amazing. Anyway.
Cellino.
In Corioni.
Anyway, after that brief period at Cagliari, he goes back to Bayern, where he has a very successful spell, and yet the thing that he's probably most famous for is that press conference which you mentioned last time, the Strunz rant, James.
He says he actually prepared all of this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He wanted all the big journos to be there so he could get his point across. And I think he was kind of fed up with a lot of the big-time Charlies, shall we say, FC Hollywood. Strunz was someone, I think, who essentially was demanding to play all the time, but was always injured.
And immer verletzt! Was erlauben Strunz!
I'm sorry, you're going to play the audio anyway. You don't need,
you don't need it.
Strunz! Strunz ist zwei Jahre hier, gespielt sein Spiel. Ist immer verletzt. Was erlauben Strunz! Letzte Jahre Meister geworden mit Amman in der Liga. Dieser Spieler war ein Spieler. Er war Meister geworden. Müssen zeigen, yes, ich will Samstag. Diese Spieler müssen zeigen mich. Es sind die Fans. Müssen alleine das Spiel gewinnen.
You had all these highly paid players who were always injured. He did the other thing, which you're not supposed to do, but I think by that point, you know, as we say in Italy, ne era pieni coglioni, like his testicles were full. He compared these guys to the people who had won the title at Bayern with them 2 years earlier. You know, which was like Didi Hamann and Nerlinger and so on, who were actually very good. He's like, these were good pros. These guys, you know, Mario Basler and Mehmet Scholl, like, you know, these guys, ridiculous, you know.
Loves Rizzitelli, though, who's there.
Rizzigo.
Rizzigo, yeah.
Yeah, magnificent. Wow, I mean, for a Trapp, it was entirely out of character. Never seen him look remotely agitated in that fashion before in a press conference.
Again, I asked him about that, and you know, he said, by that point, I had such a reputation right. as a player's coach, a motivator, and so on, that I needed to balance it out. And it was important to send a message that I could be hard and mean and nasty as well.
Right. Also, I mean, one of the great things about Trapp going to Bayern for the first spell was just how rare it was for Italian managers to go abroad in general. He talks about the risk that he took doing it, because the only guy that he could remember off the top of his head who was Italian and went to coach elsewhere was a guy called Enzo Ferrari, not the car maker, but a guy who coached Zaragoza for a year, didn't go well, finished sixth, and yeah, so that was it. So yeah, again, he was a bit of a trailblazer in that regard. Obviously, absolutely. Capello at the time, his second spell, is having success with Real Madrid, and now we've got very used to Italian managers cleaning up in England, you know, winning in Spain, Germany. Ancelotti, of course, you know, doing it with Bayern there. So, yeah. You know, well, for a guy who was essentially charged with learning a new language when he, you know, is accused of not being able to speak his own after age 50, is pretty extraordinary.
Absolutely. No, I salute all of his choices. After this second spell at Bayern, where he wins the title and a couple of cups as well, he then lands in Florence at Fiorentina, where a decade on from that Inter campaign, he comes within a Rio Carnival of maybe bringing the Scudetto back to the banks of the River Arno.
Yeah, they were winter champions, weren't they? And had been flying. After working with Juve and Inter, he ends up being employed by these basket case presidents, Cecchigori very much in the Cellino role. And he, you know, he compares the kind of seriousness that he found, you know, working on that Boniperti, Agnelli and Pellegrini to this Cecchigori figure, who is just like, he's just, there's nothing rational about this guy. You know, he's a fan, you know, in all his kind of responses to everything.
That team, though, that he had was, as you mentioned, an extraordinary collection of players. So who was there? A Batigol, of course, Edmundo, when he wasn't at the Rio Carnival.
Rui Costa.
Yeah.
Francesco Toldo, if you know.
Yeah.
And that team probably would have won the title that year. I mean, we joke about Edmundo, but what Edmundo was good, he was absurdly good. I mean, he's probably one of the most gifted strikers in the world in the 90s. It's just
he couldn't get into this team gap. This is the thing.
Well, but again, because Trapattoni was, you know, he's old school. He's like, you know, you don't work or so on. You know, I'd rather go and play Spadino Robbiati in his place. and people like that.
Luis Oliveira was there as well.
But that's what he liked. You know, Oliveira is also Brazilian or Portuguese, whatever.
Belgian.
He grew up in Belgium, and he has that Flemish work ethic, Lulu, and that's why he played on until, wasn't he play on until he was like 45 or something stupid like that? Edmundo was basically retired by the time he was 26.
What I love about Edmundo is that last week it was the Rio Carnival, and he was still posting on Instagram that he was there. So at least he's consistent about attending that.
So the whole Rio thing that season, 98-99, they're absolutely flying. As you say, winter champions, Gabriel Batistuta's tearing it up in the scoring charts, but then he tears up his knee. Now, at this point, Edmundo is booked on a flight to Rio because, bizarrely, he's actually got in his contract that he's allowed to take the middle of the season off to go and party in Rio. Yeah. Just extraordinary.
Wow. But it's the Rio Carnival. I mean,
just extraordinary.
But like, yeah, Trapp is in the car going to Pisa Airport to try and basically convince him to stay, and Edmundo's like, no.
I mean, that's Icardi-esque for me.
So the story behind that with Edmundo and the Rio Carnival, and this may be entirely untrue and entirely apocryphal, but because the two people involved are both entirely deranged, it's entirely possible, was that he negotiated that into his contract by speaking directly to Cecchigori, who was like, I don't know, blah, blah. And he convinced Cecchigori to come to Rio, not for carnival, but just for a week of nights out and debauchery. And Cecchigori said, wow, that was the best week of my life. Sure. You know, and can I come with you? Just about. And that sealed the deal.
Brilliant. Anyway, it all ended badly for Fiorentina.
Well, they finished third, didn't they? It fell away from them.
The second season was tough. Yeah. Although the second season,
the Champions League, no.
Batistuta scored that tremendous goal at Wembley. Against Arsenal.
Trapp moves on, and next comes the job that he seemed destined for, the greatest Italian manager, managing Italy. And this didn't work out as well as hoped.
Was it unlucky?
I don't think so. I think that, I mean, this
Byron
is,
Moreno?
I think watching Traps Italy, I would put to you, was always hard work. Mm. I can't think of it. Maybe the first half of the game against Sweden, which they ultimately drew with Zlatan Ibrahimovic's brilliant back heel.
Going forward to 2004.
Yeah, but I'm saying, of all the Italy games, and I certainly didn't watch all of them, I can't remember saying, wow, Traps Italy are really great fun to watch, and I think he's doing the best job he could with these players.
No, they weren't fun to watch. I think he spent a lot of time trying to figure how pieces fit together. I think he really struggled because he really is a club manager. So much of it is his relationship with the players and the daily man management. And you get these guys who are looked after by other people, and he really struggled with it. I remember, you know, speaking to somebody who'd been part of those teams, and he really had an issue with the fact that every time they would get together with the national team, it was like he had to kind of build relationships all over again from the start. He became very concerned, like, oh, what's Bobo Vieri doing? You know, what's Mark Juliano doing?
Concerned as well.
Yeah. But in the end, you have to say this about him, which is that, you know, 2004, he was out because of that 2-2 draw between Denmark and Sweden, which we refer to as a biscuit in Italy. But, you know.
Also because of that draw with Sweden, which I think at the time really felt like that's where Italy threw it away. Yeah. They were so dominant in that first half. And then basically Trapp just pulled in the oars,
as it
were.
I'll give you another one, too. It was also because Francesco Totti decided to go and spit at Christian Poulsen. But he was the guy that the whole team was built around.
Right.
2002, you know, whatever. Judge for yourself what would have happened. Suffice to say, a lot of people, including Spain in the next round, funnily enough, had a lot of things to say. And you can go back to see who was in charge of the referees committee at that World Cup. And you can go on to see like where a whole bunch of those FIFA executives ended up. And you can also go back to see what happened to Byron Moreno.
Yeah, also, I mean, he sounds like someone who'd be great to go to Carnival with, along Byron with Moreno. Jackie Gory and Edmundo, you know?
I mean, that would be some part. If he wasn't in jail for drug smuggling.
Well, yeah, I mean, this happens after the fact.
Right, okay. The disappointment, I think, of Trapp's reign compounded by the fact that it's not long after that that they actually go and win the World Cup with more or less the same group of players. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't throw his time in great perspective. As you say, there was misfortune in there.
Yeah, I suppose with Lippi, his replacement at Juve, with some of those Juve players, some of whom, you know, Moggi insisted were at major tournaments. So if in the event they wanted to sell them, they got premiums for them because, you know, players in the shop window at a major tournament makes their prices rise. So
absolutely. So that was Trapp with Italy. And then came Ireland, where we mentioned the fact that they weren't in any way a joy to behold, but he did.
You're jumping over the fact that he did something in between after he left Italy.
Oh, what did he do?
Well, at Benfica.
He went to Benfica. Yeah.
And
he
didn't Salzburg as well. Yeah. Wasn't it Salzburg as well?
He got the Salzburg job because he'd been promised the Basel job by, was it Switzerland's richest woman? I can't remember. Anyway, she says, the job's yours, Trapp. Christian Gross is leaving. And then Christian Gross decides to stay.
Right.
So she says, well, we'll pay you anyway. If you just want to go on holiday to the Maldives or whatever, it's fine. It's on us. And he's like, no, I really want to get back working. She's like, well, I know this guy, Mathershitz, owns this energy drink company called Red Bull, and he's just bought a club called Salzburg. He's got Lothar Matthäus, your old mate, as manager, but doesn't really think Lothar's up to much. So can you just basically go and sit next to Lothar? And yeah, goes and wins the league there. Hmm. But I think at Benfica, hadn't they? They hadn't won the league years now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that is, I guess, a late flicker of the Trapp talent. Because in other regards, the latter part of his career, Gab, it's a great example of a huge talent who's been a bit left behind by the evolution of the game. That's certainly the impression I always had of it.
I don't think that's entirely unfair. Bear in mind, by the time he gets to Benfica, he's 65 years old. However, we should also point out, this is a Benfica side that Porto had won, I think it was like 5 of the previous 6 titles. Benfica hadn't won the title in 11 years. Porto had won the treble the year before. He gets in, and he immediately wins the title. 2 years later, you know, when at Salzburg, he wins the title again. So, you know, there is a part of you that says, where this guy goes, he wins. And people can say, oh, but that's because he's such a big-name manager that wherever he goes, they buy all the best players and win. And maybe, but
Well, like Benfica, he talks about the financial problems that the club had at the time. They had no training ground, so they would train some days at the Estádio da Luz, but they couldn't always. So they would just go and find a pitch somewhere in Lisbon or somewhere outside of the city, which again isn't convenient. And I think he described his kind of first spell at Bayern, where he kind of fell down there, even though he remained very popular with his paymasters, was that the language barrier, just not being able to get his message across. And, you know, he seemed able to adapt to that at Benfica. He said he's only worked in very Catholic countries as well. You know, sort of Portugal, Austria, Italy.
Southern Germany.
Bavaria, yeah. So, you know, he got to a stage where he felt that he was some kind of saint on tour.
Well, buon compleanno, mito, mister. You got any final thoughts as we kind of reach the conclusion of the trap story, Gab?
Yeah, no, I just want to say, look, Ireland, obviously, it ended badly. He was paid a ton of money to go there and whatever else. But equally, while people remember the ending, it's probably also worth remembering the beginning, which involved Ireland not qualifying for the World Cup because in a playoff against France, a man named Thierry Henry very clearly handled the ball. And younger listeners, this was in the years before VAR.
And so coming up with the conspiracy theory that FIFA was sponsored by Adidas at the time, France sponsored by Adidas, and that, you know, they couldn't afford to have a World Cup without a big name like France. And it was just unfortunate, in his words, that Ireland was sponsored by Umbro.
Right.
Yeah.
But then Ireland did qualify for 2012, and that's the first thing.
And he took a pay cut as well.
Oh, really?
After that, because the guy who runs Irish football, Mr. Delaney, not Miguel, but John Delaney, is it?
Yeah.
Paid him an enormous amount of money and said, oh, well, we can't afford it now. Or, you know, you might all have to fly Ryanair for the rest of your lives. You know, it's like, oh, God, no. So, yeah, they went and they qualified for the Euros in Poland in 2012.
I mean, it was a tough group. Croatia, Spain, and Italy.
Yeah, they weren't great.
No.
But, you know, it's not as if Ireland's gone on to win too many things since.
Well, that's true. Well, what an extraordinary career he's had so far. And I wonder if we'll see him back on a bench, maybe to help out some struggling team in a Catholic country in the future. But happy 80th birthday in the meantime, Giovanni Trapattoni. One of the good guys through thick and thin, and an absolute legend. After this, we return crash bang into the present day with some pretty dramatic stories. Campionato di calcio italiano. You're listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show. Big stories this week. Claudio Ranieri returns to Rome. Juve do Atletico, and of course the Milan derby, which is coming up on Sunday. There's only one place, listener, that you can watch Milan derby on Sunday evening. Premier Sports, exclusive rights holders for Serie A in the UK until 2021. That match at San Siro is one of six live games this weekend, including Lazio, Parma and Genoa Juve, that they'll be showing across Premier Sports 1, 2 and their sister channel, Free Sports, which is, as you might expect, free. Because you listen to Galazzo, listener, you can get Premier Sports via Sky and the Premier Player for just $5.99 a month, and you get your first month completely free. Sign up now at premiersports.com, entering the promo code GALAZZO. Premier Sports is also available on Virgin TV. Terms and conditions apply, so find out more by heading to premiersports.com and entering that promo code GALAZZO. That's GALAZZO with one L and two Zs. Now, first off,
Allegri's finished. He's rubbish.
Yep.
Zidane should come in.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened?
And then what happened? Juve played the perfect game, as the Gazzetta billed it, on Wednesday morning. Tuesday night, from 2-0 down against Atletico Madrid from the first leg, with a 3-0 performance, a hat-trick from Cristiano Ronaldo. Intensity, courage, ferocity. Gab, what do you want to add to that?
No, all those things that hadn't been there in the previous 2 months.
Mm.
Like, I know Ronaldo will get the headlines, and rightly so. He especially gave that great quote after the game about, you know, what is it with you? And, you know, Juve had never managed such a comeback in the Champions League, which is slightly disingenuous because, you know, what, like 10 months earlier, they were 3-0 down from the first leg and went and were winning 3-0 in injury time at the Bernabeu against a Real Madrid team that included Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah. I wonder what Benatia thought about last night as well.
But Cristiano comes out and says, well, maybe that's why they signed me, which I thought was perfect. You know, it's alpha male Ronaldo. But we give him a ton of credit. But I think we need to give Allegri credit here for doing just as we've beat him up, or I have, because Juventus have been, frankly, atrocious for the last 2 months. I don't care how many games they win.
Or how many points they
get. How many points they get. But they've just been horrendous. He put his team in the mindset to show courage. He showed courage himself, you know, putting Emre Can in the back three. Bringing out Spinazzola. Had Spinazzola played in the Champions League before?
No, this was his Champions League debut.
You know, when do we ever see this guy? You know, but in the build-up, everybody was talking like, oh, well, you know, but you need to remain compact, so maybe he'll play Cáceres. You know what? Why didn't Cáceres go sell ice cream, you know, in Mar del Plata or whatever? What? Playing Bernardeschi, saying like, you know, you're on the pitch, but you're going to go and you're going to work your butt off.
But you're also going to produce a ridiculous assist. Was it the first goal?
For Ronaldo,
Yeah. How does he produce that, but from behind the defender as well? Because it's not like he's not being marked.
And also Bernardeschi, I wouldn't say coming into the side, because I think as with Emre Can, Allegri's been working on these two players over the last few weeks. And they've been, I wouldn't say their best performers, but certainly justified being in the team. For example, in Bernardeschi's case, ahead of Dybala going into this game. But Bernardeschi was everywhere in this game. Atletico had a really hard time picking him up, and part of that was all down to the structure, because with Can sort of dropping down into the back three, Cancelo pushed up, Bernardeschi then came inside, and if you're the fullback for Atletico, you're like, what do I do here? Do I go with Bernardeschi? If I do, then Cancelo's free and can put crosses in, as he did for the second goal for Ronaldo. So, but yeah, I think it was really encouraging for the manager of Italy, Roberto Mancini, because Spinazzola, as Gab mentioned, for the first hour. And this is a guy that they were on the brink of selling to Bologna in January, or letting go on loan to Bologna. He plays an hour, and his average position was essentially as a guy who was part of the front attacking three rather than as a fullback or wingback. He absolutely tore apart the fullback on the side. I think in the first half he took him on 9 times and beat him 9 times. And you know that was just Juve reining in crosses for mismatches with the other fullback. I think it was just a great night all around.
I think Atletico had a lot to do with it. I'm a huge Simeone guy. They were absolutely terrible. They misinterpreted the game entirely. And I think Simeone, much as I adore him, bears a ton of responsibility for this. But there's no question that Juve came out there with the right mindset. Allegri was so creative. It could have blown up so badly in his face. Now the question is, Max, why don't we see this more often? There's a good piece in Gazzetta where they make the point that, you know, some people will go out and say, oh, but the problem is there's such a big gap between the big teams and the little teams in Serie A, so they're not pushed and stimulated. But that's a mindset. You know, in Holland, there's an even bigger gap between, say, Ajax and Heracles Almelo or Go Ahead Eagles or whatever other Dutch nonsense you come up with, Excelsior or whatever. But they go and they play that way all the time. And, you know, I don't think it's excessive to demand that of Juve as well. So you don't have situations like that first leg in Madrid.
Right. Atletico Madrid have been knocked out of every Champions League knockout stage they've been in for the last 7 years by a team containing Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah. Well, James, and this is the other thing. So Gab was talking about the question that was put to Ronaldo about Juve have never come back from losing the first leg 2-0 away. And it turns out that in the Fairs Cup, they'd done that back in the 1670s, and it was against Atletico Madrid.
Wow, that's interesting. Okay, now, Roma responding to their recent travails, as you probably saw last week, by bringing back Claudio Ranieri. They'd been knocked out of the Champions League, of course, by Porto, got beaten by Lazio in the derby. So Claudio comes back in. How long's the contract?
Well, I think it's until the end of the season.
All right.
And I don't think there's an option to extend, but obviously if they do very well. I think this 2.5-3 months between now and the end of the season is obviously a chance for Roma to see how he does, but it's also a chance to review the structure of the club, which has changed dramatically since last year, but also maybe to weigh up options, maybe better options than Claudio Ranieri.
Okay.
Great to see him at training with his Nils Liedholm bobble hat on. No? It's brilliant. Loved it.
I think it's been a massively popular decision. There wasn't a big crowd on Monday night against Empoli, but those who were there gave him the only cheer of the evening when the teams were read out. Roma had a 2-1 victory over struggling Empoli. Of course, the goodwill, not just because he's a lovely chap and he's Romano, but also the fact that last time he was there, he had the Giallorossi on course for the unlikeliest of league titles, at least until the one that he did actually win at Leicester.
And derailing Jose Mourinho's treble, which would have rewritten history.
Yeah, so he comes up against Inter in the cup final and loses to them there. And in the league, as he puts it, we were half an hour away.
I mean, they were top of the table between the 32nd and 35th games of the season.
Yeah, so they put together a 24-game unbeaten run, which saw them overtake Mourinho's treble winners.
Mourinho let, and I think Mourinho's lead was 12 points.
Yeah.
And then he was 1 point behind. 13-point swing.
Wow.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Until that fateful match at home to Sampdoria.
Yeah, when Pazzini and Cassano, basically.
Yeah, Cassano, the returning bad boy.
You see Philippe Mexès on the bench crying for Roma.
And the commentators on Mediaset's Roman channel, pretty much in tears themselves.
Vince 2-1 la Sampdoria con una grandissima curva sud, una grandissima curva sud che sta ancora inneggiando. E ci vuole molta forza, quella che noi in questo momento francamente non abbiamo.
I mean, that would have been just extraordinary to see again Totti winning a league title, but also De Rossi, who wasn't part of that 2001 team and led by a Roman in Claudio Ranieri. It would have been the perfect trifecta. Now it's,
I think there were, how many games were there left after? Maybe three, four games?
Mm.
But Ranieri's stare, I think that'll haunt me forever, actually. He's standing on the turf at the Stadio Olimpico after the final whistle's blown and they've let the lead slip to Inter and he's just staring. He knows.
And he said last week that not even winning a fairy tale league title with Leicester could get him over missing out on that title with Roma. It's something which will live with him until the end of his days.
It's a really delicate position that Roma are now in. They are in fifth spot, 3 points off the top four in Champions League football for next season.
They're hoping there's some collateral damage in the derby coming up this week in Milan.
So this weekend, Roma's match after the victory in Claudio Ranieri's debut at home to Empoli sees them visit Spal. That is live on Free Sports, 5:15 on Saturday. Other games on this weekend, Cagliari up against Fiorentina, that's Friday evening. Genoa-Juve is Sunday morning. That's followed by Lazio-Parma, Napoli-Udinese, and then the big one Sunday night, 7:25, coverage begins of the Milan derby to finish off. Milan, who just moved into third spot, they're now 1 point ahead of Inter. They're only, I mean, I say only, they're 6 points behind Napoli. And the question being posited now, I think, on the given the run that they're on, 10 games unbeaten, is whether second place might be a realistic...
Oh, ragazzo, come on now.
Is that... No,
well, they've got the best defensive record in Europe's top five leagues since the start of December.
Really?
They've really shut up shop, but they're scoring goals with... And this is, I think, one of the interesting things about this derby is that a lot has changed since the reverse fixture.
Inter won, what was it,
1-0? 1-0 Icardi in stoppage time.
Right.
Who won't be there by the looks of things. Obviously, Milan have changed up front because Gonzalo Higuain is now at Chelsea. Piontek has come in.
8 goals in 8 games.
Yeah, you've got Paqueta, who looks tired, but has obviously given them something a little bit different in midfield. They were able to And Bilia, who's scored a fantastic free kick in the win against Chievo at the... last Friday night? No, it was last Saturday night, wasn't it? And so there's, lots of interesting new...
They're winning, and they also look like a team going somewhere. Inter, meanwhile, Gab...
Inter have to play on Thursday night. Brozovic might be injured. Miranda, I think, is injured, but then who cares, because they're almost better off without him. And then you've got this Icardi nonsense going on, and you're just kind of left in this, and you're kind of like, all right, so you hope that Handanovic can make some saves and
Keita Balde maybe.
Yeah, that's the answer, isn't
really
it?
Just coming back,
Mr. Inter. Reliability.
Of course, in Spalletti's kind of way of seeing things, there's no difference between the Keita Balde Diao thing and the Icardi thing. They've just both been injured.
Right.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question: is Mauro Icardi fit?
I think there's no question that he's fit.
So,
even in the Instagram post that he put out, his side of the story, he said he'd played through pain before, which is kind of like he's had this sort of inflammation of the knee,
which only
all season.
The doctors say he's fit, so you know.
So he's missed the first leg against Eintracht Frankfurt. He's missed a run in which they only got one win in five games.
They started
maybe?
Really well without him. Mm. They responded pretty well. I think they were galvanized by the fact that, okay, a lot of us expecting the wheels to come off now.
Yeah.
But then
they had five wins in a row, I think.
Yeah. And then it started to obviously ease up because other things have been catching up with Inter. Injuries, suspensions.
The word last week after the first leg against Eintracht Frankfurt with Lautaro Martinez picking up a suspension was that, oh, definitely Icardi will be back for this then because we've got nobody left. He has to come back. But apparently, no, he's not going to be there for that. He wasn't there at San Siro for the game last weekend. The word is that he's unlikely to be featuring in the derby against their rivals in this top four battle. I mean, they're absolute rivals.
Well, and he has been, in this fixture the last couple of years, he has made it awful watch for Milan fans because he scored hat-tricks, he scored stoppage time winners. Often been the difference in it.
So we talked about Edmundo before, but I'm struggling to think of an example, however upset he was about losing the captain's armband, which happened for a reason, of an example of a player just basically sitting out the most crucial games of a team season.
Because he loves Inter.
Because he loves Inter, just saying, nope. So if he's fit, I just don't understand how the club can allow this to happen. They have to.
Well, but by the same look, I think the guy's deranged, and so is Wanda, and they deserve each other. But before we go and absolutely crucify him, we should point out that this is a guy who's scored a ton of goals and was a hugely reliable goal scorer, not for one season, but for four seasons.
Right.
In the history of Serie A, there's only one, among those who've scored 100 goals, there's only one player in the entire history of Serie A who has a better strike rate than he does. So he performs when he's there, right? Uh-huh. So he's weird and he's got his issues. But you know what? At the weekend, he lives literally next door to San Siro, right? So last time, he goes to the game, and then Spalletti was like, but he doesn't go into the dressing room. Spalletti was like, well, but we should have come down to the dressing room. You know, when clearly the police and authority says, you know what, probably best that you don't start wandering around the stadium. This time he stays home, and he gets criticized for that. I mean, I know this is Inter, but is it necessary to go and create this drama, to go and just crap all over? I mean, if I were Marotta, what I would first do to Spalletti is say, like, you know what? Here's a piece of duct tape. Put it over your mouth and do not ever speak about Icardi ever again. And if you don't like it...
He's like, I don't want to talk about this. I don't want to talk about this. Okay, I'm going to talk about
it. So you feel Spalletti is the problem here?
Spalletti is one of many, many problems.
So am I wrong in thinking that Icardi is in the wrong here? A player...
He's definitely in the wrong. I mean, I think that much is pretty much... He's in the wrong. He's oversensitive. There's obviously things that...
But there's a difference between...
But despite all this, he has been productive for 4 years.
Until he decided not to show up for work.
Because his wife goes on television, right? And she is a paid pundit on television.
Mm-hmm.
She gives her opinions on football. And you can argue, she shouldn't do that. That's fine. I agree with you. She shouldn't do that. But to have a team of what should be professionals, and who in reality are a bunch of spoiled, or not everybody, but many of them are a bunch of spoiled brats who are like, oh no, we can't have the captain's wife go on television criticizing us.
Because that was seen as the reason why he lost the captain's armband, is that right?
Of course, that's why.
Of course, yeah. I mean, he completely lost credibility in the dressing room because he wasn't prepared to basically defend the team.
He wasn't prepared. What they wanted him to do, because some of these people are a bunch of chauvinists who live in the 1930s, you know, it's the old thing about, oh, you know, get your wife in order, you know.
But if you're the captain and a component of your family, be it male or female, earns their living by criticizing your teammates.
It's even the thing she said. She said stuff like, I think Lautaro should play more.
She also talked about the way that he's not getting enough service.
He should be getting more service.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. Is there a wise pundit who says, like, no, you know what? I think Icardi should be getting less service.
Having the captain's wife criticize the performances of him and his Inter teammates is always going to work out badly for somebody.
I don't dispute that.
Okay, so the question is what should be done about it? Now, what Inter have decided to do is say, okay, we'll not make you captain anymore, and then at least we don't have the captain of our club, a component of his family, criticizing the way the team is run. His reaction, I understand that he was disappointed given the contributions that he's made to Inter in the past, but I just don't see how there's a way of defending him sitting out these games and saying, yeah, I'm not sure when I'll be back.
I'm going to make an analogy.
Okay.
James, imagine you and I are flatmates, right?
Right, yeah.
And I don't like your taste in television.
Right.
Right? Because, and So the way I deal with it is, you know what, this television, it just really annoys me and stuff like that. I know what I'll do. I'll take the remote control away from you. And then what happens as a result, you set the house on fire because you're deranged. That's what's happened here. You take Ikari's armband away and he reacts in this demented way. But you have to, I have to know you. I have to know, am I cutting off my nose to spite my face?
But hang on.
By taking away the captain's armband.
Okay, I hear what you're saying, and that analogy has brought it home to me in a very real sense. But isn't that exactly the attitude that you've always criticized in Defoe for indulging people's foibles, for being weak towards people when they needed to be strong? Isn't this a case when they have to go, look, Mauro, thanks for all the goals, but if you're really that unhappy and you can't be bothered to turn up when we absolutely need you, we've only got, what, 11 players available for the second leg against Eintracht Frankfurt, and we've got the Milan derby, and you're not sure if you can be there. We need somebody who will turn up, whether they're wearing a captain's armband or not.
I think they are saying that to him, through a lawyer, by the way, because that's what these negotiations... They've had two meetings, and it's Beppe Marotta is there, and it's a lawyer speaking on behalf of Wanda Nara and Mauro Icardi, that I'm sure that's been a discussion point for them. And as both Marotta and Ausilio have kind of not really come out and denied Juventus's interest, or, I mean, even Paratici came out and said, yeah, well, we did give Wanda a call to see what Mauro Icardi's status was in the summer. Someone that Juventus wanted, which, you know, for a club that is so kind of, you know, has been so protective of this, our success is the culture that we've managed to create, that they were prepared to, you know, to bring in.
That'd be an interesting clash, wouldn't it, between the old lady and the old
lady? Well, also, yeah, but also I think the thing is, Juventus's dressing room has big personalities, veterans who are strong enough to, I'd say, yeah, keep Icardi in check. That's not the case at Inter. They gave him the armband. Essentially, it's like, well, we can't pay you probably as much as the market would. We've got all these FFP restraints. So here's the captain's armband.
Here's the remote control to our television.
You know, and and there's no one in that dressing room, because even Handanovic, he's like...
Mr. I mean, personality.
Well, this thing, Gattuso calls Piontek RoboCop. I mean, you know, what is Handanovic? I mean...
He's RoboCop in charging mode. He's plugged in.
RoboCop is his battery is why, running out.
The Milan derby is going to give us plenty to talk about in next week's Golazzo. So do join us then. Gabriele, many thanks for today.
It's been a pleasure, James.
Excellent news.
If you're and good, I'll let you keep the remote control.
All right, well, let's see, eh? James Horncastle, mind that burning furniture. We'll be back next week. Listen, I hope you will too. For now, from all of us here, it's arrivederci.
You've been listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show. It's a Muddy Knees Media production, and for sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Check out our other football shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audio Boom, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.